Warning. This is a lower middlebrow program. Listening to it is frowned upon by the Committee for the Dissolution of Middlebrow Taste.
Oh, but, sir...
Madam, no exceptions can be made.
But, sir, my son is acting in the program, and I promised to listen to him.
No exceptions can be made. Madam, your critical standards must be considered first. The Committee for the Dissolution of Middlebrow Taste will know if you betray.
Oh, I shan't listen. Oh, forgive me. I shan't listen.
Very well, then, madam. Mr. Director, you may start your show now. The highbrows have been warned.
Living 1949, brought to you each week by NBC and its affiliated stations. Today, from materials supplied by Russell Lyons in Harper's Magazine, fashions a radio mirror in which you, gentle listener, may perhaps see yourself reflected. And assessing your cultural and intellectual profile, so to speak, may classify yourself as
highbrow,
lowbrow,
middlebrow.
Step closer, please, closer. Hurry, hurry, hurry. That's right, mister. Step right up close. Now then, this afternoon, not for 60 minutes or even 30 minutes, but for the small sum of 25 minutes of your time, you can discover for the first time on any network your B.E., ladies and gentlemen. That's right, your B.E., your brow elevation. Find out what C.P. you live on, what cultural plateau you live on. When you step inside, you will discover what I mean. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, the professor is waiting, waiting to tell each and every one of you lovely ladies and gentlemen how to gauge your B.E., your brow elevation. And here he is, Professor Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. Greetings and warnings. You may be starred in the social register, found acceptable to who's who, rated AAA1 by Dun & Bradstreet, but even so, you may be just a schnook to the Olympians of culture, that is, the highbrows 1949. The revolution is upon us. The good old-fashioned snobbishness that Grandma used to practice is on the way out. Listen.
It isn't wealth or family that makes prestige these days. It's high thinking. In the new social structure, the highbrows will be the elite, the middlebrows will be the bourgeoisie, the lowbrows, hoi polloi.
As yardsticks of brow elevation, then, bank books and breeding are out the window. Some lowbrows are as rich as Billy Rose and as flamboyant. Some as poor as Rosie O'Grady and as modest. Some middlebrows run industry. Some run the Women's Auxiliary of the Second Baptist Church. Most of the highbrows are in poorly paid professions, notably the academic. Most of the middlebrows use Form 1040A to declare their income taxes. Yes, the middlebrows are top dog today, but neither the highbrows nor the lowbrows like them. But enough of generalizing, let's get personal. Let's find out, where do you stand, where do I stand? To gauge your brow elevation and mine, let's examine them in turn, high, low, and middle. Specimen one, then, in the cultural zoology,
the highbrow.
Popular writer Edgar Wallace, no highbrow he, was once asked by a reporter,
Mr. Wallace, what is a highbrow?
A highbrow is a man who has found something more interesting than women.
Footnote. Presumably at some time in every man's life there are things he finds more interesting than women. Alcohol, for example, or the World Series. Brenda Matthews, the savant of Columbia University, that is, came somewhat closer.
A highbrow is a person educated beyond his intelligence.
Comment, A.P. Herbert probably comes closest of all when he writes,
A highbrow is the kind of person who looks at a sausage and thinks of Picasso.
To the real, the genuine, the hand-tooled highbrow, even the ordinary things of daily life have deep cultural connections. Let us observe.
You've never seen one like this before, have you? Observe the clean lines of the design. No hard artistic scroll work. Sheer, clear, functional design. It just arrived yesterday from that little shop I told you about that I ran across in London before the war. I had no idea the place was still doing business. The man's a genius with tools. Here, take a good look. Honestly, old man, have you ever in this country seen such a razor?
And the foregoing applies also to the special bottle for his pills, to the stand he hangs his hat on, to the bed he sleeps in.
And everyone does say, as he walks his highbrow way, if that's not good enough for him, which is good enough for me, why, what a very, very highbrow kind of man this kind of man must be.
You cannot tell a man that he's a lowbrow any more than you can tell a woman that her makeup is grotesque or that her clothes are frumpy. But a highbrow doesn't mind being called a highbrow. The highbrow has worked hard, read widely, traveled far in order to establish his squatter's rights in his little corner of intellectualism, and he doesn't care who knows it. And this goes for the two kinds of highbrow. Kindly observe.
Type A, the militant or crusader type.
Type B, the passive or dilettante type.
Generally, these types live happily together. Type A, the militant highbrow, carries the torch of culture. Type B, the passive highbrow, reads by its light.
The carrier of the cultural torch is most frequently found in university and college towns. Member of the liberal arts faculty, teaching languages, ancient and modern, the fine arts, or literature. His spare time is often devoted to editing a magazine, which is read mainly by other highbrows, would-be highbrows, and ambitious undergraduates. When he writes for the magazine himself, or for other little magazines, as they're called, it is usually criticism or criticism of criticism. He leaves the writing of fiction or poetry to others. He is primarily a critic, not an artist, a taster, not a cook.
Lone scholars sniping from the walls of learned periodicals, our facts defend. Our intellectual marines landing in little magazines capture a trend.
Footnote, that's from a poem by W.H. Auden, a highbrow-approved poet. For a specific example of an intellectual marine in action on the little magazine field of combat, give heed, this from Partisan Review.
In all essential respects, Kessler's phenomenological descriptions remain independent of the physiological explanation. For instance, what by association means phenomenologically is clear and suggestive enough. But there is no reason why it should be considered either as somehow identical with or as casually determined by the underlying physiological response.
And everyone will say, as I walk my highbrow way, if this young man expresses himself in terms too deep for me, why, what a very singularly deep young man this deep young man must be.
No matter where they live or whatever their particular cultural passion, all highbrows have a common enemy, the middlebrow, who
is busy devaluating the precious, infecting the healthy, corrupting the honest, and stultifying the wise.
Footnote, the militant highbrow has no patience with his enemies. It is part of his function as a highbrow to protect the arts from the culture vultures, and he spits venom at those he suspects of selling the muses short. But everywhere he turns, there is threat.
Now, listen, Fred, I wouldn't say this so bluntly to anybody but you. I know you'll understand. That Callum person sent me some more of this stuff for the magazine today.
Ben?
Frightful.
Why do you even bother to read it?
I am hoping he'll finally take the hint I've been jabbing at him. Just because he happened to be in our class at college. That's what started me off, Fred. Everybody and anybody has a free pass to culture these days. The schools and colleges are wide open, and of course, any idiot can read a paper or a magazine, turn on the radio, or go through a museum.
Take it easy, Paul. That's all part of the democracy you sometimes write editorials about.
Yeah, but
I know what you're getting at. The distinctions are blurring between those who really belong and those who'd like to.
Exactly, Fred, exactly. Culturally, what we have is a democratic free-for-all where every individual, being as good as every other one, has the right to question any form of intellectual authority. It's becoming more and more difficult to tell who is serious and who is not.
The trouble is, Paul, there are very few who have the standing that you do and care as much as you do.
There are enough of us if we really get together.
A kind of intellectual elite?
Why not? We'll constitute ourselves a fluid body of intellectuals whose announced role in society will be to perpetuate traditional ideas and values and create new ones. Perhaps then we can eliminate the insidious middle brow.
In passing, note the persistence of the desire for an elite. This is hardly new. Highbrows have been talking like that since Plato. With which observations, let us proceed now to specimen two in our cultural zoology.
The middle brow.
Virginia Woolf, a true highbrow, wrote...
The true battle lies not between highbrow and lowbrow, but between highbrows and lowbrows joined together in blood brotherhood against the bloodless and pernicious pest who comes between.
The pernicious pests divide themselves into two groups.
The upper middle brows, the purveyors of highbrow ideas.
The lower middle brows, the principal consumers of what the upper middle brows pass along to them.
Answering the roll call of what the highbrows might call the mercenaries of culture are...
Most educators, museum directors, movie producers.
Art dealers, lecturers, and the editors of most magazines which combine national circulation with an adult vocabulary.
A footnote, in this camp may be found one Mr. Russell Lines, to whom Living 1949 is much indebted today. And incidentally, radio programs like Living 1949. The upper middle brows devote themselves professionally to the dissemination of ideas and cultural artifacts, and not in the least incidentally, make a living at it along the way. They are the cultural do-gooders. They see their mission clearly and pursue it with determination, with glowing eye and throbbing throat.
Hang Picasso in your home and you'll be saved, you'll be saved. Read all best-selling books and you'll be saved, you'll be saved. Go to lectures, see a play, improve your mind in every way. Culture can be made to pay and you'll be saved, saved, saved.
It should be noted that some of the upper middle brows are disappointed highbrows, the bench warmers of the intellectual varsity team. Some of them try to work both sides of the street. This is a charge frequently leveled at conscientious book publishers caught between the muses and the masses. As the publisher is a favorite whipping boy of the highbrow.
And why not? The only time he's really happy is when he can sell a couple of 100,000 copies of a yarn about a high-molded fuzzy with a horsewhip, or a book on how to look 40 when 45. However, I must say this, he can be useful, but he's not to be trusted. The same goes for the educators and the museum directors and the big magazine editors. All this very busy concern with mass education and mass culture leads only to compromise and mediocrity.
The lower middle brow believes he knows what he likes. But he's the boy who's constantly being pressured into wearing knickerbockers one year and rust-colored slacks the next. He and his family are the ones in the advertisements, and the ones toward whom the advertisements are directed. His is a world that smells of soap. But it's a world of ambition as well. The constant striving for a better way of life. Better furniture, bigger refrigerators, more books in the bookcase, more afternoons at golf. To the advertisers, this is Americanism. To the highbrow,
the dead weight around the neck of progress, the gag in the mouth of art.
The lower middle brows far outnumber the highbrows and the upper middle variety. They live everywhere and in all sorts of homes. In big cities, in medium cities, in suburbs, in small towns, from Portsmouth to Del Monte, from Oregon to Florida.
These are the book club members, the course takers.
Also the listeners to the lecturers. They are hell-bent on improving their minds as well as their fortunes.
Footnote, the lower middle brow woman is almost always more concerned with mind improvement, her man with financial success.
Oh, it's getting late, Grace. I think I'll turn in. You coming?
Oh, I just want to finish this chapter.
What's the book on the table there? A new one?
Yes, it just came this afternoon. It's the book club choice for June.
Well, what about the one you're reading?
Oh, that's the one for May.
You better get it done before you know it. The July selection will be here.
Ha, very unfunny, dear. Why don't you read the new one? You'll like it.
How do you know? Have you read it?
Well, I read the report of the judges.
Yeah? How do they know?
Now you're just being stupid. Well, the judges are all experts in literature. That's all they do.
What?
What?
What's all they do?
Why, they study and think about and write about books.
Yeah. Suppose you don't like the book they send you. What then? Does that make you wrong or them?
Now, stop playing the roughneck. Of course, some books are more interesting than others, but the mind needs its roughage just as the body does.
That's a dirty trick to play on your mind.
I might remind you that a civilization is made up of other things besides golf and bowling and business.
How that could be, but I seem to remember the Greeks one time made a pretty good job of civilization and culture, and they did it practically barehanded, without book clubs, ladies' literary uplift societies, or lecturers.
And what makes you such an authority on early Greeks, darling?
Promise not to tell a soul, but I once read a book. Sweetheart.
Let us now document, authentically, another of the lower middlebrow species. A native of Vermont, occupation, lawyer, judge, governor, vice president, and the time of incident following, president of the United States. The incident came about in this manner. Once, soon after his swearing in, he invited a prominent member of his party to the White House. After some talk, the president asked,
"You any ideas about this job of mine?"
There then followed some discussion of policy. As the visitor was about to leave, he offered a suggestion for another field.
"Mr. President, I've always thought that a president ought to use his office to confer distinction on men eminent in their lines. Theodore Roosevelt used to do it. He was always having authors and artists and scientists, all sorts of people like that, stay at the White House. Now, if I were president, especially if I were a president from New England, as you are, there's one thing I'd do."
"What?"
"I'd have some of those New England poets come and visit the White House."
"Just what poets do you have in mind?"
"Oh, any of the New England ones. Robert Frost, Edwin Arlington Robinson, Edna St. Vincent Millay. She was born in Maine."
"Frost? Robinson? Never heard of them. There was a fellow in Boston when I was in the legislature who used to write poems. Newspaper man, McCarthy."
On the reverse side of the lower middlebrow coin was the culture-hungry lady of the 20s, who was caught for posterity in a Helen Hokanson cartoon. She is standing before an outdoor bookstall in Paris and is asking the proprietor,
"Avez-vous Ulysses?"
English translation, "Do you have Ulysses?" Ulysses is a highbrow novel by an Irishman named James Joyce. It was published in Paris and banned in America until a few years ago. Specimen number 3 in the cultural zoology,
the low brow.
First, it really should be noted that the lowbrow is the highbrow's friend, as observed.
When left clean and unprettied up, their arts are things to be enjoyed and respected in their various uncommercialized manifestations. Jazz, for instance, and the other art forms as well, are spontaneous expressions of folk culture.
Further, the lowbrow doesn't threaten the authority or position of the highbrow. In fact, the lowbrow doesn't give a hang about the highbrow nor about art as something to weigh, measure, and dissect.
"I see a picture on a calendar, either way I like it or I don't. Same goes for a song, for a hoofer, or a dame. I know what I like, so what difference why I like it? You like the opera? Okay, that's your pleasure. I like a good western or a mystery. I don't have to go to the opera, see? You don't have to go to the movies. Live and let live, I always say."
There are creative lowbrows found among jazz musicians, painters, wood carvers, ballad writers, folk dances. To discover these primitive geniuses and interpret them to the world is the self-given mission of many a highbrow.
"Buzz, it's amazing. How'd you hit on it?"
"What are you talking about, Mr. S?
Remember that tape recording I made of that bop number last week?"
"Uh-huh."
"Well, I've been playing it over and over for some of my friends. Do you realize you've composed a miniature canon that's pure Bach?"
"Is that good?"
"Is that good? Listen, I'm going to do an article on you for Hoot."
"I never heard of him."
"It's a magazine."
"Never heard of it."
"Well, after my article comes out, they'll be flocking down to hear you."
"Well, we're doing good business right now."
"You don't sound very enthusiastic about my article and what it can do for you."
"Well, it ain't that, Mr. S."
"Then what?"
"Oh, you keep putting out how I do one thing better than some longy named Copeland and another thing better than
Joe Doksky.
What's wrong with that?
Well, nothing, I guess. But if I keep messing around with you, next thing I know, I'll be studying music.
High, low, upper and lower, middle brow. The line between them is sometimes indistinct, as the line between classes have always been in our traditionally fluid society. But gradually they are finding their own level and confining themselves more and more to the company of their own kind. But that is not the ideal highbrow solution. In their secret and often not so secret hearts, they dream of their perfect society. An intellectual feudal system in which the lowbrows do the work and create folk art, the highbrows do the thinking and create fine art. And as to the middlebrows, the highbrows dream blissfully of detag.
Gentlemen, I suggest that all known middlebrows and fellow dishevelers of culture be exiled in boxcars to a collecting point somewhere in the vicinity of Independence, Missouri.
All middlebrows shall immediately have their radios and television sets taken away. They shall be suspended from society until they agree to give up their book club subscriptions, turn in their color reproductions, and renounce their affiliations with all cultural and educational institutions whatsoever.
The Committee for the Dissolution of Middlebrow Culture is now in session. The witness, having already been sworn in at the previous session, you may start your interrogation, Mr. Prosecutor.
Name?
Ferdinand Ball.
Occupation?
I was an instructor at the university.
Did you or did you not ever conduct a course in art appreciation? Did you ever praise Norman Rockwell and Grant Wood?
I refuse to answer on the ground that it might incriminate.
Answer the question.
He did. He did.
Answer yes or no.
Yes.
Speak up!
Yes.
Mr. Ball, you are accused of devaluating the precious, infecting the healthy, corrupting the honest, and stultifying the wise. You've subversively plotted to undermine highbrow culture.
No, sir. I haven't. Never.
Let's go on, Mr. Prosecutor. Ask him the central question. Go on, ask him.
Very well, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ball, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Board of Judges of the Genuine Oil Painting of the Month Club?
I respectfully refuse.
Who wouldn't? He's guilty, all right. Look at him. Take him away.
Final footnote. It's a fond and arrogant dream they dream, but the highbrows really haven't a chance. Things have gone too far. Yes, there are too many of us whose B.E., a brow elevation, you'll remember, places us squarely among the middle brows. Plainly, if not surrounded, we've got them outnumbered. Everybody but the genuine lowbrow is jockeying for position in the new cultural class order. So it's onward and upward just the same. Olympus, off us! Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Today's script by Milton Wayne was based on an article by Russell Lyons in Harper's Magazine. The music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shields. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to our drama document entitled
Wanted, Fresh Air.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.